What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am Dave Smith. He is Robbie the Fire Bernstein. We haven't seen each other in a few hours. How's it been? How'd you sleep?
I think it was all right. I don't remember anything too exciting going on, but reminding the fans, we got Boston, Chicago, big Ooh. Shows coming up.
Boston coming up soon. Boston is just in a few days or in 1 week, the 26th, 27th, 28th up at Laugh Boston. Go grab tickets for those ones because those shows will sell out. It's a great weekend last year. Sold out the whole weekend. Really awesome. Really looking forward to getting back there. And then Chicago, the Rosemont Chicago Zanies run is for what? Three years now. We've just had great weekends every year there. So yeah, looking forward to all that stuff. What is there to talk about, Rob? It's another one of these shows where there's just too much and I don't even know what to start with. I don't know about for you, Rob, but this one is particularly surreal to me. And we've covered a lot of stuff and, you know, during COVID when there were lockdowns, I remember that feeling like very surreal. I remember the, being on the Upper West Side of Manhattan like a week into lockdowns and you could hear the birds chirping, and like I had never just heard birds chirping in New York City. Like it felt like you were like in I Am Legend or something. There was no one on the streets. There's something about this war just feels, I don't know, is as surreal to me as any of that. And it's more particularly bizarre because we've basically been predicting this. And yet, even though we've been predicting it, it's like, as it happens, you're like, no, they didn't really just do that. That's not really going, oh my God, yeah, it's all going exactly the way we said it could. That Iran can touch all types of shit and create all types of havoc. And we, like, this is just different than any other the other terror wars.
Dave, unlike you, I don't suffer from Trump derangement syndrome.
So oh, yes.
I am fully aware that Trump always wanted to get rid of the Middle East natural gas. And
yes, that was always the plan, of course.
Get rid of that infrastructure. I'm aware of this. Did you not remember him campaigning on that? Getting rid of natural gas in the Middle East?
Rob, the humiliation that he has to come out today. So 2 weeks ago, Israel hit a whole bunch of the energy infrastructure. Trump asked him not to do it. Then Israel does it again. Now Trump has to put out a message saying that wasn't us, that had nothing to do with Qatar, that was only Israel, and they're not going to do it again. And you just kind of know they're going to do it again at this point. You know what I mean? You just know it's like that's the game here, like just systematically. And I got to say, you know, Rob, I'm no conspiracy guy. So I'm not saying there's any conspiracy here. I'm just saying like in effect, that what we've been covering, me and you, Rob, on this show, the entire time we've been doing this together, it's nearly a decade of us doing a show about the news together. And if you remember, you know, we watched with our own eyes the Trump movement kind of from beginning till now. And there's just no question that, look, the never Trumpers, right? All the guys who love Donald Trump right now, who were the never Trumpers, they were terrified of this movement. They did everything in their power to speak up against it. And why was it? I mean, why was it that they were so terrified of that? Why was it that Mitt Romney came out and said any other nominee, National Review ran a whole never Trump issue, you know, the most influential conservative publication. And guys like Ben Shapiro were never Trumpers. Mark Levin, never Trumpers, all on principled reasons. Well, why was it that they objected to that? Because like, they did not like the idea of a populist right-wing movement that was totally critical of our foreign policy and, you know, as well as other aspects of our government. But let's be real. The foreign policy is what motivated those guys the most, right? That's what they didn't like about Donald Trump, is that he stood up there and said, your brother lied us into war. And he said, Obama created ISIS. And he said, why can't we just be friends with Russia? And you know what I mean? Who cares if Assad is overthrown in Syria? Why can't we just be friends with Russia? We both don't like the terrorists. And by the way, we both don't like the Sunni radical terrorists, the ones who actually did 9/11. And, you know, this is, to me and you, this might sound like obvious, great common sense, but to an entire multi-trillion dollar industry, this sounds like the biggest threat of all time. You're threatening them with murder. That destroys the whole thing if we're not in the business of forever wars. So they flipped out about all of that. And anyway, I'm just saying, then all these guys infiltrated kind of the Trump. Now they're his biggest cheerleaders. And what we're watching here, Rob, is the systematic humiliation and destruction of the coalition that they feared with these guys at the front of it. And like, it does kind of feel intentional that like every goddamn member of this administration had to individually be humiliated. And yeah, it does all kind of tie back to a kind of central group. You know, Bobby Kennedy has to come out and say the national health emergency is anti-Semitism. Like, what is that other than just making that guy humiliate himself and lose all credibility? Pam Bondi and Kash Patel and Dan Bongino each have to come out and say, I know for a fact that Jeffrey Epstein is nothing other than someone who never sex trafficked anyone or had any intelligence connections or had anything, and he killed himself. They all have to come out and humiliate themselves. Of course, as we covered on the last show, Tulsi Gabbard has to come out and humiliate herself now. And then Donald Trump doing it all along the way. It's just wild to watch. Any thoughts, Rob?
Just that we're winning a war, and we always wanted more chaos in the region. And so everything's going to plan. No escalations. By the way, it was reported that apparently Trump knew about or even approved of the strike in Iran. But I guess he certainly didn't like that they struck back at Qatar. And so instantly hopped on to go, hey, guys, we had nothing to do with that. No.
I'm sure that's right. I mean, I was just kind of making the point that he'll tell them to stop and then they'll end up doing it. And it gives the impression that like he can't even rein them in. No, I don't think Donald Trump is trying to rein them in at this point. And I don't believe any of the reporting saying that Donald Trump and Netanyahu are about to have some big split. That's like the type of shit they've put this out like 16 times already, trying to get people to just like, no, stay on board. He's about to do something real cool. No, he's not. And even if it is the case that Israel got out of hand and he asked them not to do this and they did it again, which that I do, you know, I don't know. I guess there's a chance that's the case. I shouldn't have said it as a certainty before, but if that is the case, okay, it's still his fault. Yeah, it's still his fault. He brought us to this dance with this wild animal. And of course, they're good. Of course, we know they're trying to topple the regime. And if he did approve it, then just what is this? What a mess this whole thing is. And there's so much, it's amazing, you know, like when the war propaganda just starts flowing and people just start making all types of these claims that just aren't right. I caught this one earlier today. It's just like one example of kind of like what's going on like the other side of the, you know, this argument where what are people being told to try to gin up support for this thing? So there's an account I wasn't familiar with, but this is a big account, has almost 1 million followers. Masih Alinejad, she's an Iranian journalist, an activist, and the president of the World Liberty Congress, which is some like European organization. And they, so she posts about this. I don't know if you heard about this, the Iranian kid who was like a wrestling star or whatever, 19-year-old. Today in Iran, in the middle, this is our post, which, you know, has got 1.4 million impressions in it. So this is like, you know, I don't know, worth mentioning. Today in Iran, in the middle of a war, the regime executed a 19-year-old national wrestling champion for the crime of joining January protests. This guy was executed. The crime was murdering two police officers that he was convicted of. Now, I have absolutely no idea. I'm anti-government to the core. I have absolutely no trust in the Iranian judicial system or whatever. Perhaps none of that's true. And perhaps, you know, they just made it up and it was just for the protest. But it's a pretty incredibly misleading thing to put out there. Right? Like at this time, you know, the accusation of, they're murdering another protester is just to try to get you to ramp up there. But like, at least according to them, this is what he was convicted of, was murdering two police officers. That's kind of different because now you're in a realm where like, look, I don't know that conviction is true. I don't, you know, who the hell knows? I don't trust the Ayatollah Mullah regime to have a fair criminal justice system. But it's just kind of like no way to do international policy to be like, anytime, you know what I'm saying? Like if someone's murdered of being a cop killer, convicted of being a cop killer somewhere, that we'd go, I'm not buying what that regime said. Like we've had countless, you know, convictions overturned through DNA evidence in this country. In other words, we get it wrong a lot because there's a lot more people than the ones who were able to prove that they were innocent after they had been convicted guilty, right? Like there's a significant percentage of people sitting in jail in America who were not guilty of the crime that they were convicted of. But it would be weird for another foreign... Did you get my point there, Rob? It's a very misleading war propaganda type of thing to act like he... You know, like they just charged him as if the government is just saying nakedly, you went to those protests, we fucking publicly execute you now. When in fact, what they're saying is that there's these two dead cops, we're holding you responsible for it. Now we're executing you.
The way I see it is that we have to oppose all regimes that are violent towards their own people. And that's why the Iran war is so successful, because the Iran war is actually spilling into a Saudi Arabian war. And so look at us as we oppose all these evil dictatorships in the Middle East all at once.
Yeah, look at that. We're taking down our allies along with our enemies. Now, I will say I did see, and I saw this just shortly before I came on, and I posted something about it. But I did see, because this is, I don't know why I was, it stuck out to me because the first person I've seen, and perhaps that's on me. I have, as you guys know, I was away with the family for a few days here. I'm a little bit more behind than I typically am, although I was basically up all night reading, and then I was up early again this morning. But Konstantin Kassin, who, you know, I think we've debated twice, and I did his show once, Trigonometry. And I really enjoyed, I enjoyed all of them, but I really particularly enjoyed the last conversation we had. But I saw, he's the first person I saw, and I saw he was in an interview in the Free Press, where he was, he's the first person I've seen who is an adamant defender of the 12-day war, being like, yeah, I don't know about this one, guys. Like, I thought the whole thing, I mean, these are my words, not his. You can go listen to what he said, but he was kind of like, look, I was for the thing when it was like, oh, we dropped the bunker busters, no U.S. deaths, no regional catastrophe or disaster, you know, like no huge price tag to it. And it accomplished a very specific goal of taking out their nukes. Like, okay, I was with that. But this, I do not think is going to work out well. Now, he was not opposing it maybe in as strong a language as I wish he was, but... You know, you're always compared to what, judging on a curve to some degree. And I give him a lot of credit. He was saying this on the Free Press, and he's like the only person I've heard. Maybe I'm missing someone, was what I was getting at before. Please let me know if I am.
He's only two more articles of reading away from going, what the hell is Israel doing?
It does always feel like, it feels like everyone is two articles away from that. I guess one of the reasons why I found it noteworthy was that, as you remember, Rob, I mean, by the way, I'll give this almost as like an assignment. If there's somebody who is listening, who's good at video editing, who wants to go do this and put it together, I'll give you credit, and I'll share it far and wide. But I really think if you can just go back to some of like the debates I was in and the debates other people were in, like, remember how the bad guys loved to make montages after the 12-day war of me and Tucker and John Mearsheimer and all that? I'd be like, ha ha, you were predicting catastrophe. Let's go back and see how many of them were arguing explicitly under the guise that this isn't George W. Bush, it's Donald Trump. He's not going to get us into a disaster. He's just going to do a surgical strike and then walk away. He's not going to kill thousands of people and waste tens of billions of dollars or whatever. Like, there are so many great quotes in there of those people. And the reason why I appreciated what Konstantin said is that so many people explicitly supported it on the condition that they were like, yeah, 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 Dave, if we were talking about regime change, I wouldn't support that. If we were talking about a protracted conflict, I wouldn't support that, but I'm only supporting it because it's surgical and no American deaths and no this. And for all of those people, they all just moved the goalpost, it seems like, as soon as Trump did the next thing. Okay, well, now I'm going to support Trump. But Constantine seemed to be kind of sticking to that principle. So I really do appreciate that. It's rare.
I'm going to get that montage made.
Yeah, dude, I bet there's a bunch. I think it'd be like not that hard to find a bunch of just amazing, like, oh, look at that. Look at that guy. Totally. Just literally, it's like, because that really is almost like the essence of the difference between any of us who are in this world where we're like talking about politics and policy to an audience who listens to us, whatever the hell you call this, anyone who's in there, it's like that's what separates like who's playing fair by who's a fucking liar. Like it's like if your whole thing is just like, okay, you have your politician who you like, and then they do a thing, and then it's your job to rationalize why that thing was right. Then like you suck and you should go away. You're just like, so it's so evil what you're doing. Like you're like poisoning people's minds. Like if you don't even, it's such the lowest bar. I'm going, just believe in something. You have to believe in something. Not just I'm on this team. And man, there is a lot of that, a lot of it.
Did the free press throw him off and go, we're sorry, that was the wrong answer, and we were looking for they're a terrorist threat to the region and needed to be taken out?
Well, no, and I don't know the chick who was interviewing him, but it was, no, I mean, she was not, she was listening to him. And he made the point in a delicate way. And he made the point in a way where he was saying like, and look, they've killed, like he was going, they've killed 30,000 people and those would have been the 30,000 who could have overthrown the government. So, you know, there were some parts in there that I really didn't agree with, but he presented it. But also, you know, it's important to that, like, sometimes like maybe that's the way to present it that could get the free press audience to hear it. So anyway, I think of those things as net positives. But I will say, you know, much like this hysteria about they killed 30,000 people. No, I mean, it's amazing after the last 25 years that there's no, you know, people just don't go like, hey, let me really examine extraordinary claims that are being made at the beginning of a war. Okay, like you're claiming one of the biggest massacres in human history took place like in a couple weeks. I mean, the number of deaths you're talking about. I mean, think about, you remember when the talking point, Rob, was they go, this is as many people as Israel killed in 6 months in Gaza. And you go, right. So you're claiming that 6 months of Gaza, like 6 months of the Israel-Gaza treatment happened in a week and a half? In Tehran? Okay, that is an extraordinary claim. Is there an aerial view of like just decimated square blocks in the middle of Tehran? You know what I'm saying? Like, did they carpet bomb Tehran? Literally, if you carpet bombed a place for a week and a half, you might get numbers like that. These are the numbers we're talking about. Like, if people follow wars, it's an extraordinary claim. And then you're like, oh, what's the evidence for that? And it's like almost nothing. Come on. At the beginning of a war, you see something like that, you don't just repeat it. You have to be a little skeptical about these things. But the other propaganda we were talking about is the MAGA Republicans thing, which we talked about on the last show. And I got to say, let me just, here's a prediction I'll make on the show. I'll put my neck out there. What's going to happen here is right now there's a divide, the divide on the right. Right, that we all know exactly who I'm talking about on each side. Lindsey Graham, Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes, you know, like whatever the big divide over essentially support for Israel and support for the war. Right now, if you'll pay attention, what we're saying on our side is that the coalition has been destroyed. What they're saying on their side is that nope. It's just proven how irrelevant you are. The entire coalition is still with us, right? Is that pretty fair to say that that is the clear split right here? Is one side is saying the coalition is over. The other side is saying it's just proven how irrelevant you were to the coalition. This is very popular. This is going to be great. We're going strong. I guarantee, and I don't think this is going to take long, the conversation, the next goalpost shift is going to be you destroyed the coalition. Watch them immediately shift to that and never acknowledge that they got it completely wrong when we were telling you the coalition was being destroyed. I guarantee it. Go watch that happen. That's what it's going to split to that. You know, I saw a poll today, Rob, I was looking through a few of them. Well, I saw CNN was reporting on one, and then I went and I looked up a few more. But they're the cost of living, like who you how you approve of the job on the cost of living, which was the number one issue, of course, through the entire election. And so Donald Trump was up like a few points total, you know, when he was running against Kamala Harris. But I was surprised he wasn't up by more at the time. And maybe he was in reality. But it was like, it went from like +3 to -40 now. Now amongst independents, he's -60. And again, I'm just saying, they can try to give you these little polls all they want to. Donald Trump is going to crater soon. It's coming up. He's, you know, the thing is that Donald Trump still has right now a little bit of a window where it's still kind of the beginning of the thing. And he's going, dude, we're crushing it. You have no idea how great this is going. You know, that's what he's saying right now. And he's saying, you know, listen, Rob, it's over. We won. We won on day one. We could go home now. It's over. They've been set back a decade, he says. I mean, it's over. We've totally won. They're totally decimated. I don't think we will go, though. I think today will be the biggest day of action. Yeah, today also is the biggest day of total destruction. If you look at the natural gas bombings and, you know, if you look at all this and all the Iranian responses, but like it's over. We won. It's great. What's about to happen is going to be just amazing for the region. It's going to be historic. We're 2 weeks into him saying that, which is enough to give some percentage of Trump voters a, all right, well, let him cook. That's what he's got still. He's still, if you throw a ball up in the air, he's still at that point where it's hit its highest point and it's no longer going up, but it's not going down yet. You know, it's like to some degree with those Trump supporters. But if he just leaves today, which is the best case scenario, then as the weeks go by, as the months go by, people are going to examine what was that? What happened? Except death and destruction. And the more he keeps going, the worse it gets. And so this is, I'm telling you, all those guys right now saying that, no, the coalition is stronger than ever. What we figured out is that Tucker Carlson doesn't matter. All them will switch immediately to Tucker Carlson ruined our whole coalition. Watch it happen.
And I think what's different about this war, I didn't send this clip over, but there was a Peter, was Peter Dukey? That's what I call him. I don't actually know his last name. Ducey. He was in the White House, and Trump was saying, you know, I thought that the stock market would go down more than this, and I predicted that gas prices were going up, but it's worth it. And usually when it comes to these wars, they're unbelievably expensive, and we don't actually see the consequences for 10 to 20 years. Like, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine where would the United States be if we hadn't spent all the money that we did on the terror wars for absolutely no result. But it's not like in the first month of the terror wars, at least from what I recall. I do remember gas being up under Bush, but it's not like it was,
that was
alarming.
Later, but that was like 2007, 2008, I think, or maybe even a little bit earlier than that. But maybe 2006, there was the gas price went up. But yeah, it was years after the thing started.
So now we're in an environment where you have no job growth in this country. You already have people are in tune with the idea of inflation and they're concerned about inflation. You've got a military that's asking for $200 billion. Going on and on about how great it is that you brought gas prices down. People are seeing gas prices going up. I don't know enough about the oil markets to tell you each day that their Hormuz is closed, how much that means that your oil prices are going up. But a lot of natural gas infrastructure apparently was knocked off the face of planet Earth just yesterday.
Yep.
And then you just got to think about how fickle the actual financial markets are because they're completely built on fraud and what this is going to do for every economy if suddenly, you know, energy infrastructure is just being blown up and people can't get the oil that they need.
And now Donald Trump, and if you heard what Donald Trump, again, his latest comments, he's in the position now of saying, yeah, it's going to hurt the economy, but like, it's really no big deal. And, you know, let me tell you something. It would have hurt the economy a lot more if they had nuked us in a year.
Yeah. Like, and the problem with that is God. Who believes that we were being nuked in a year? You're going to have to sell the American people that it was worth the economy stalling and gas prices going up and you living a harder lifestyle because you were going to get nuked in a year. And how many people are buying that we were being nuked in a year, particularly when you weren't able to fabricate the intelligence apparatus to manufacture these phony reports prior to the war. You're never going to
sell. And you just told us, and also you just told us you obliterated their nuclear program, and you just sold us on how this was easy and that it was taken care of, you know? And it's like, and that's, I guess that's really the essence of what, like, why I give Constantine a little bit of credit, but again, even with him, I don't know, but we did a whole debate on the 12-day war. That might be where you want to go look for some of that stuff, because there were just so, it just seemed like after the 12-day war, and maybe particularly for me, I just kind of, I don't know, I don't mean to, like, you know, make it about me or be selfish. I am a little bit, but I really think this is important because it's about the whole thing. But, you know, I was kind of like, I had the biggest year of my career last year. And it really, like, a lot of things changed for me. And it was kind of like all of the things were going, like, I was kind of becoming the guy where it was like, oh, my takes always aged really well. The thing that I, like, stuck my neck out on and made myself like, oh, Dave's one of the big proponents of that, it all aged really well. It got more and more popular over time. Being against lockdowns was not popular when we were against lockdowns, I can tell you. I remember it very well. And in fact, Rob, I mean, you can remember where you were, like, especially where we lived, you were kind of like a pariah, like, for being a person that just was against this whole thing. You know what I mean? I remember you, even when you were doing that show where you were destroying all Corinne Fisher's dumb friends, but it's like everyone in the room against you. You know what I mean? Like, it was like that a lot. But over time, that became very popular, and being against Ukraine and being against the, you know, all the restrictions and the, like, it just, all those things kind of aged well and became more popular. And then it was like the one thing that all my critics really tried to get me on last year was like, yeah, but the 12-day war, man, you made it out like it was going to be a whole thing, and it wasn't a whole thing. And that was kind of like what they relied on at the end of it. They were like, that wasn't a whole thing. See, panickins, you guys were so worried. And now, like, when we're proven, and then we all go, yeah, but all the same dynamics are still in place. This is only halftime. This is what we've been saying. We've been saying this is halftime for 6 months. Well, they said, no, you were just a panickin. And then it's like, second half, time to start. And you're like, okay, so who was right? The halftime people or this wasn't a thing people? And, like, it is kind of an integrity test that none of those guys admit it. You know, like, none of them, even Constantine and his thing, he wasn't admitting that he was wrong about the thing. You know what I mean? He was still saying, no, that was right. And this is, I'm skeptical of, which is, you know, I give him credit for that. But no, it's like you guys very specifically, your whole case. And then they spent 6 months or whatever it was being like, ha ha, you guys got it wrong while we were getting it right the whole time. And so, you know, it's not like to spend too much time. I really am not trying to collect I told you so's. I don't care about that. I want anyone who's against that. I hope if anyone who supported the 12-day war is against this shit now, great. Let's have more people who are against it. But it is kind of like a pretty basic integrity test for the people who really tried to hold this over, you know, our head. Like, look, it is true that John Mearsheimer and Tucker Carlson and a few other people, Jeffrey Sachs, I believe, made some statements without caveats where they got a little out over their skis, and they said, if you bomb Iran's nuclear sites, you'll get this, what we're getting right now. You know, like, they all said with certainty that the nuclear sites would have triggered this, and it didn't. The nuclear sites, they still waved the white flag one more time, and then this next time it triggered this. But, you know, again, in hindsight, you know, you can dunk on them as much as you want, but now that we're here now, you're like, yeah, okay, but they did broadly get the whole thing right other than that. You know what I mean?
Well, I remember saying at the time, wait 6 months for all you people who are celebrating being right. And Tom Elliott hooked us up with some Arabian access, so I'm going to have to go in there and we'll get some montage clips.
Oh, what did he give you?
It's basically the software everyone uses to make those montages. So me and Natalie are going to have to do some homework, and we'll get some good montages. Yeah.
Ooh, he gave us the good stuff?
Oh, we got
all
the
right.
good stuff
I
now.
Like that. Love Tom Elliott. He was, man, that account, I actually, it is, it's funny because, you know, it's such a strange new world, but he really, I thought, just had such an important account and still does. I didn't mean to put it in the past. He's not dead, guys. I wasn't bringing that news to you. But it's just like a big account on Twitter that essentially just holds up the corporate media right back up to the people and just reminds you, like, remember when they were saying this? And hey, remember when they were saying this? It's like, it's so amazing how you can use that technique to like completely shatter them. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I've seen Tom like post and make good points and stuff like that too. But it's amazing how you could just like you could just be like, here, remember what you were saying back then? Uh-huh. And how does this jive with this? And you've destroyed their argument without even making your own comment on it. And he was also...
Well, I think it's one of the worst things in our culture is that you can be repeatedly wrong and just keep going about your business. And in this, when the game is truth and being honest, when you can be celebrating the 12-day war on, look, this was only a small little blip. We weren't actually doing anything. We can do this properly. While people like us were warning, hey, this could be a very risky endeavor, and I wouldn't celebrate this being over. I do think it's important to showcase that those people were wrong.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with that. I mean, it just, to me, that seems obvious. Okay, let's, there's so many topics. We got shows for weeks to come up here. Let's play, let's play the Ben Shapiro celebrating this is Ben Shapiro giving his thoughts on Joe Kemp. It's the one that's neocon Ben Shapiro.
And he should stop celebrating these wars because his eyebrows get bushier with each bomb that's dropped.
It is true, but maybe that's the goal, Rob. Maybe that's
is
the plan
world's
all along.
Biggest eyebrows?
Yes.
Well, this morning, Joe Kent quit his job at the National Counterterrorism Center and issued a scathing letter designed to undermine President Trump. The letter is deeply, deeply conspiratorial. It states openly that, quote, Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, and it is clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby.
Okay, just pause it here. Pause it here already.
Now, that is conspiracy.
Okay, I just love how Ben Shapiro, it's gotta be, just think about, he goes, it's deeply, deeply conspiratorial. Deeply conspiratorial, Rob. I mean, this is like... this is like the world is flat and made of cheese stuff here, okay? The conspiracy is part one, that Iran posed no imminent threat. Totally consistent with every threat assessment that we've gotten over the last 15 years. So that's the first deep part of the conspiracy, is that annual threat report that says that every single year, he thinks it's still that. This is crazy. And then the second... The second part of this deep, deep conspiracy is that Israel and the Israel lobby have been pushing us into this war. Because, like, but Rob, if that were true, there'd be signs.
like a whistleblower. You do have to wonder, at what point is it no longer conspiratorial to say that?
Well,
like,
right.
What further evidence needs to exist?
What the standard of, like, would the prime minister of that country visit us 7 times in a week and fucking lobby for this war every single time? Would they go in jointly with us into the war? Would they viciously attack and smear all the opponents of the war? I mean, like, this is just, anyway. Okay, so that's how Ben Shapiro sets this up. Wild conspiracy. Obviously ridiculous on its face. Don't let the fact that you can see it in front of your eyes fuck with you. Hey, let's keep playing.
Chrissy, trash. It's also kind of strange, since President Trump has said that it's conspiracy trash. So apparently, Trump is so deeply, deeply enthralled.
All right, pause.
To the
pause
strange.
It right there. That's so. Ben Shapiro's first piece of evidence that this is a conspiracy is that the guy in charge of it said so. That's his first. So I mean, well, I don't know, man. Case closed. If Donald Trump said it's not a conspiracy, then okay, that's true. If Donald Trump doesn't come out and say, I know this war is stupid, but I was pressured into it by Israel and the Israel lobby. Yeah, I wonder why he wouldn't say that publicly. Let's keep playing.
Powerful American lobbies. We're not going to say it. We're not going to say it. We're not going to say that he apparently has been so bamboozled by them that he's still under the impression that he's his own man. But here's the thing. President Trump is his own man. He makes his own decisions. And as per our usual arrangement, Trump's critics are cowards who are simply unwilling to acknowledge that Trump is the one making the call. But Joe Kent continued, quote, early in this administration, high-ranking Israeli officials and influential members of the American media deployed a misinformation campaign that wholly undermined your America First platform and sowed pre-war sentiments to encourage a war with Iran. This echo chamber was used to deceive you into believing that Iran posed an imminent threat to the United States and that should you strike now, there was a clear path to a swift victory. this was a lie, and is the same tactic the Israelis used to draw us into the disastrous Iraq war that cost our nation the lives of thousands of our best men and women. Again, the idea here seems to be that President Trump is a moron, misled into war by nefarious Israelis and unnamed influential members of the American media. Don't say it. Again, apparently President Trump has no agency and no thought.
All right, let's pause it there. It's just like, here, and you can make us big screen while we talk and then come back to it. Yeah. You know, this is an argument that the war hawks use over and over again. And I love how they present it as if this is like even a kind of intelligent, compelling argument. So you're saying Trump has no agency? This is what they always used to say. When I called the Maidan Revolution a U.S.-backed coup, they'd be like, oh, so you're saying the protests on the street had no agency? And I'd be like, no, I'm saying that the U.S. poured $100 million into the protests. What do you mean? If Joe Kent is making the claim here that the Israeli government and the Israeli lobby pressured and manipulated Donald Trump into something, and your response is, oh, he doesn't have agency. Like, those two things, there's no contradiction there. There's no claim of a lack of agency. Can human beings be pressured and manipulated? Do human beings have agency? The answer to both questions is obviously yes. Rob, I could pressure you into doing something. That doesn't mean you don't have agency. That also doesn't mean it couldn't be effective. And I could pressure you. I pressure Rob into doing lots of stuff he doesn't want to do, and he still has agency. Like, what they present this, it's almost like these, they're kind of like drive-by arguments where it's like, hey, let me say this real fast and get someone who doesn't really think it through to go like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, no, Trump has agency. He can do it. Maybe if you want that conclusion already. But like, nobody is saying Trump doesn't have agency. This is what actually the letter was saying. Like, sir, you can still turn this around. He advocated the same thing on Tucker Carlson's show the other night. You know, he was like, sir, you can still do this. No one's saying you don't have agency. This is just silly. Non-rebuttal. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, two things that I find interesting. One is, I believe it was during the 12-day war, but I've heard Netanyahu say the exact same thing. That for those who think that Donald Trump was doing this on our behalf, no one's stronger than Donald Trump. Donald Trump cannot be persuaded, and blowing smoke up Donald Trump's ass so that you can't undermine him by trying to make it seem like he's being pushed by other people. But what's funny about this Ben Shapiro video to me is if you just took out the couple times, you can make this edit. If you made the edit of the couple times he goes, this is ridiculous, this is outrageous, and just change the tone, you actually have very good political analysis here. He's actually nailing what's going on. He's just trying to pretend that anyone who would have these thoughts about the situation are, you know, stupid people. But if you just change the tone, you actually have perfect political analysis of the actual situation.
Yeah, and the idea, because I kind of took on the agency thing, but the idea that even, look, I do not think Donald Trump is strong or wise or principled. I don't think he's any of those things. But they try to make it out almost like, well, if you're saying Israel did this, then you're saying he's a big, dumb, you know, whatever. You know, he's not a strong leader, or he's stupid, or he's so... Well, that's not necessarily true either. To say somebody's been manipulated into something isn't to say that they're really stupid or that they don't have principles or anything like that. Intelligent, principled people can be manipulated too. They can be misled. They can get things wrong. They can be pressured. They can be threatened. They can be blackmailed. I'm not saying that's happening here. Just saying, like, there's a whole range of possibilities where you know what I'm saying? Like, one doesn't imply the other. This is actually just like total fallacious argumentation by Ben Shapiro, which his whole thing was brand used to be calling that out. Here, let's keep going.
With this conspiratorial idiocy, including, as we just saw, the idea that it was Israel that forced the original Iraq war, an idea totally and utterly unsupportable by any evidence, given the fact that the actual prime minister of Israel at the time, Ariel Sharon, okay, opposed the Iraq war.
Okay, so pause it here. I mean, again, I know I've taken this on the show before. Again, you can make us big screen for a sec. I know I've taken this on the show before, but this is when, so Ben Shapiro is going to say, there's no evidence no evidence to support the claim that Israel pulled us into the Iraq war. And you go, well, look, I mean, as everybody knows, Benjamin Netanyahu is the longest serving prime minister in Israeli history, including the current prime minister that's conducting this war we're talking about with us right now, okay? And everybody knows that he testified before Congress a few weeks before the vote on the authorization of military force in Iraq that we should go overthrow Saddam Hussein and guaranteed positive reverberations would sweep the region. Like, just that alone, you can't say there's no evidence that there was any Israeli connection. Just because you got him, like, you're saying he wasn't the prime minister at the time. He only had done one term and then went on to be the longest serving prime minister in Israeli history. That's still, like, I don't know, Rob, kind of connected to the government of Israel. And as I've mentioned many times before, he also wrote an op-ed in, it was in the Wall Street Journal that year, I believe. He wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Perez wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post. And Ehud Barak wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, all saying the same exact thing. Overthrow Saddam Hussein, positive reverberations, WMDs, all of this shit. And then also the one point he has about Sharon, which you guys can go back and look this up. I got to double check this note, but you can find it for me. I believe it was in the summer of 2002, but I might be off by a month or two. But go listen to Sharon's speech in the Knesset, because he had totally gotten on board with the war in Iraq. What happened was at the very beginning, after 9/11, when they first started hearing rumors that we were going to go into Iraq, Sharon and his branch of then Likud, they later split from Likud, but his branch, they were like, no, you shouldn't overthrow Saddam Hussein. You should do the Ayatollah first. That was their thing. They're like, you overthrow Saddam Hussein, or, you know, the Ayatollah is going to take over too much power now. You got to do that first. And then he basically got assurances that Iran was coming next. And so he got on board and he supported the whole thing. But what Ben Shapiro will tell you, so all that shit is true, okay? All that I just said is true. And what Ben Shapiro tells you out of that is there's no evidence because Sharon was against it. Tell me if you think that's honest. Is that honest to say that somehow is evidence against it? One prime minister being against it, that's proof. But then having three prime ministers who were for it, and then having, including the guy who goes on to be wielding the most power throughout the entire global war on terrorism leading up to right now, like, that doesn't count as any evidence. That's zero evidence for it. Oh, and the fact that Sharon turned around and then supported the whole thing, that's also not evidence. Like, and by the way, this is not secretly. He didn't secretly turn around and support it. And that whole year leading up to it, Mossad and Sharon's government put out all types of fake intelligence about weapons of mass destruction and all that shit. So it's just total lie, total dishonesty. I don't know. Anything you want to add on that?
That's more your expertise. But mm-hmm. I'm comfortable blaming the Jews.
only particular ones. Remember, people, that's our entire point here. Only particular ones. Not all of us. All right, let's keep playing.
Opposed the Iraq war. This stuff is brain rot. Now listen, we should all be thankful for Joe Kent's long and honorable military service. We can also be glad that he's leaving, since his ideology is the same as that of Tucker Carlson, the guy who says that the war is disgusting and evil and who has been busy sexting with the mullahs. Tucker Carlson calls Kent a personal friend and, quote, the bravest man I know. Frankly, I think that it is a good thing that Kent is not in this position. We cannot have a director of counterterrorism who is somehow advocating preemptive surrender to the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism in the middle of a war.
Oh, my God. I mean, just imagine trying to say just like how fucking disingenuous all of this is. This is why I really like, I mean, it's what gets me angry, and it's why I do think it's important that we're always doing battle with these people. Because just think about what Ben Shapiro is doing here. Even when he says something like sexting with the mullahs, meaning like what? Like Tucker's a journalist who was reaching out to people in Iran, and like that's the job, man. If you can't, that's the whole point. If you can't do that, then how do you ever know what's going on during a war? You need people who are reaching out to the Iranians for comment and things like that. What is anyone suggesting here? that Tucker Carlson was reaching out with battle plans, working on behalf of the mullahs to defeat. No, it's just that guys like Ben Shapiro want to make sure you can never hear the other side of the story during a war. And this isn't to say anything good about the Ayatollah or the mullahs. They're a theocracy and an oppressive, you know, authoritarian government, and they do all types of bad things. But it's just like there's been such a dereliction of duty by the media in the lead up to this war, where, like, as we've talked about before, it never even gets explained that they had promised to never develop nuclear weapons, and that they had a religious ban on developing nuclear weapons, and that they were open to negotiations, and that they were even willing to come back into a JCPOA-like deal and bring down their enrichment. And, like, this just doesn't even get reported. And then guys like Ben Shapiro will go out of their way to demonize anyone who's talking to them, so that he'd try your best to never let that stuff come out. And then for him to say, you know, that, you know, we had a guy, you know, it's good that Joe Kent's out because he was advocating total surrender. Like, Rob, what total surrender is not what anyone's ever talking about with these wars. That is just so dishonest and so stupid. Total surrender, as in, you know what total surrender means? It doesn't mean pulling out of a war of aggression that you launched. That's not surrender. Like, these words have meanings. These are military terms. We're not surrendering to any foreign country. We could destroy the world with, like, three of our submarines. What are you talking about? Who are we surrendering to? Saying get out, call it quits, end it now rather than in another week or another month or another year. Just end it now. And the, you know, the people who would frame the people who would frame pulling out of a war as a total surrender are the people who would have you in forever wars. And that's what we've been hearing for the last 25 years, right? Is that, oh, if anything, it's surrender if you ever pull out.
It's like the steps of loony world that you have to walk into. So if you're willing to accept that Iran was on the path to get a nuclear bomb, and that it had a desire to both have a nuclear bomb and nuke the United States of America, and that it had the mechanism to nuke the United States of America, then you'd be foolish not to go to war with them because it's a preemptive surrender, which even in that case, it wouldn't be, because I don't think anyone thinks they wouldn't have had enough nukes to nuke our entire country without us nuking them back. You still wouldn't even have a surrender there. So it's just it's like the stages of loony world that you have to walk into to try and LARP with Ben Shapiro. Like, this is an accurate or cohesive summary of what's taking place.
Yeah. You know, we should talk about before we get out of here. And there's so much to talk about. I had, like, I think, like, five more clips, none of which we got to. But whatever, we'll record it next time, or I'll get it all out. I'll probably put a few more shows out in the next few days. But we should talk about, I don't know if you, did you catch Tucker's show with Joe Kent?
I watched the whole thing last night.
It was very interesting. And it's funny, as Ben Shapiro is picking on this as the deep, deep conspiracy, I would have, you know, maybe thought, and maybe he did comment, I just watched the clips, but there was one portion of it where it did get a little bit more conspiratorial. And I thought it was very interesting that the topic of Butler and Charlie Kirk both came up in Joe Kent's conversation about why he left. And now he did not claim that he had reason to believe, you know, he didn't claim that he had seen evidence of, you know, like, Israeli involvement in Charlie Kirk's assassination or anything like that. He didn't say he had seen evidence of a conspiracy, but he did make a pretty major claim, which was that he said that there were things, like, essentially, he's the director of counterterrorism. And so his role is, if this has anything to do with foreign connections. If it doesn't, then this isn't for me. This is the Department of Justice and the FBI's business. But if it has to do with foreign connections, then that's where I come in. And we get to the, you know, the bottom of that. And he basically said that there were things that should have been followed up on. Like, in other words, there was enough within a circle to be like, I should be investigating whether there are foreign connections to this. And it was suppressed and the investigation was shut down. You know, now that is a pretty bold claim. And he did go on to say a little bit more than just that. And again, this is, you know, it's one guy saying this, but it was a guy at a very, very high level position. It's not just like, it's a little bit different when you hear someone like Candace Owens talking about stuff like this, where she's coming at from the perspective of a dear friend of Charlie Kirk's who's trying to put pieces together, you know, of a puzzle based on, you know, what she can get off the internet or whatever. Or I shouldn't just say the internet, but off, you know, the people who she knows who are around them and her sources. It's a different thing when you hear a guy at the absolute top of intelligence and he comes out and he starts talking about how, like, you know, Charlie Kirk was the most adamant opponent of the 12-day war and really trying to persuade Donald Trump to not get into a war with Iran. And he was loudly saying this, and he was the only one who really had the president's ear who was trying to stop that. And, you know, he goes, it is just, you look at the situation where, okay, the guy who was trying to stop this war, then they get into a situation where they need this war to be sold again. You know what I mean? And they know that it's coming in a few months. They need to be sold again. And then this guy ends up publicly being executed. And then our investigation is suppressed. Like, he was saying it in a way that's like, huh, look at all that. That's something to look at. Like, this is very important to look at. And, you know, that's a really big deal coming from the guy who was the director of counterterrorism. You kind of can't just brush that off. And I saw... you know, I saw some people, like I saw a clip of Fuentes, and he was saying something like, he was basically going, and I know he's had a history with Joe Ken. I think they don't like each other, so that might be coloring it a little bit too. But he was like, hey, if you have some evidence, fucking give us the evidence. I'm tired of all this bullshit. But I don't know. I looked at it and went, no, I think he's saying he doesn't have any other evidence. You know what I mean? I think he's saying that, like, this is what I've got, that I was shut down from finding that evidence. And so essentially, this is all he can tell you. But you got to admit, all I'm saying is that when you lay it out like that, that does seem like something that you would have to get to the bottom of and investigate to the absolute fullest. And then he mentions the Butler thing too, which, look, I mean, this is all, and I'm not claiming some conspiracy. Like, that's not my thing. I'm not sitting here like putting dots together that I can't really prove. I really don't think I ever do that. But I am saying, man, it's pretty goddamn weird that we just have no information on Butler still and who that guy was. And there's never even been an attempt to, like, you would just think when something like that happens to a president like Donald Trump, you would have to at least come up with some national story so we could all wrap our heads around, like, okay, what was that? What radicalized him? Why did he do that? What was the story? Oh, he was on all these crazy meds and his dad used to beat the shit out of him. And then he got radicalized by this. It's like, they don't even try. They just go, no, can't get into any of his phones. And if we could, there wouldn't be nothing there. And that's that. I don't know. It's all pretty shady.
I thought there was another conspiratorial angle, which was whether or not some of the intelligence that we've been hearing about actually made its way to Trump. And it was somewhat insinuated that potentially, I guess, Trump's inner circle has kept him from some of that information, which is why the Tulsi Gabbard meeting yesterday was so important, because at some point we got to find out, like, this is treasonous. Either Donald Trump has gotten this information and made the worst possible blunder ever, or someone has purposely misguided him and not given him important intelligence, and in which case those people need to be held accountable.
I, you know, it's interesting to me because, and I will be the first to admit that I'm not like the biggest expert in exactly how the chain of commands within the deep state intelligence apparatus works and who can block what information or what, but like just on the face of it, you know, like essentially what he's claiming that he was blocked from giving the president intelligence. The response to it has been, no, he was being iced out because he was a leaker. And so essentially, this is what a bunch of them are saying. He was a leaker. He was being investigated. He's still being investigated. And That's why he was getting boxed out of all this stuff, because he's a leaker, and he only resigned because we knew he was a leaker. He was probably going to get fired soon anyway or whatever. But the issue you have there is that you go like, wait, but you're telling me that the active director of counterterrorism cannot get information to the president that he deems vital information? Like, that there's ever a time where that's just blocked? You could be at the, you know what I'm saying? Like, could the director of national intelligence, if they have intelligence about the war that's about to be launched, there's ever a situation where someone can go, no, sorry. Like, Susie Wiles can just go, no, sorry, that's not good. Who can do that? Like, I just don't, it seemed to me that that would be, wouldn't you always have a direct line of communication or even an indirect, but, you know, line of communication that will work? Like, you will be able to get this information to him. That was a really shocking claim, because again, what he's claiming, the information that was kept, was that Iran isn't an imminent threat. And that would be, well, Rob, very pertinent to this situation if he's going to launch a war under the belief that they are an imminent threat. That was wild.
Yeah, those were the two moments that really stood out to me while I was watching it.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Look, obviously, Joe Ken is just one guy, but he was a guy at this very senior position, and you at least got to say, and I know, again, look, I don't really know the case exactly that Candace has like put together on her shows, or like, I know Ian Carroll had been doing some deep dives or on this stuff, and that, like, I don't know who's right. I haven't watched it. And I'm just, you know, busy enough trying to keep up with what I'm doing for these shows, and then having, you know, a family and being a touring comedian and stuff. It's just hard to keep up with everything. But it does seem to me, like, in my humble opinion, broadly speaking, if you've got the people like who are going, hey, I think there's a conspiracy or something involved with Charlie Kirk here, and then you've got all the people who have been flipping out about them and being like, how evil it is that you could say this, you're such a loon, you're such a kook. I don't know. If you're calling balls and strikes here, I don't know how you couldn't say that this is kind of at least pretty damn vindicating for people like Candace Owens to have like the director of counterterrorism come out and be like, yeah, no, I think there really is something we need to look into here. And by the way, I was trying to do that and they blocked me from doing it. Like, that's kind of vindicating to at least the broad strokes idea that there's a conspiracy here. Unless
you want to take Ben Shapiro's side of the story, that he went to Google and said biggest conspiracies about the Iran war in this administration, and then just put that directly into his resignation letter.
Yeah, well, yes, that's also that. Anything's possible. But look, I like as I've always said, I have been from the very beginning, in the immediate aftermath of Charlie's death, I was the guy going like, hold your horses. Like, I'm not jumping onto any of these conspiracies. I don't see any evidence for anything. But people, I was calling people out for making wild claims and they had no evidence. And I generally, you know, believe that. I haven't seen anything like what could even be resembling a theory of what happened that I thought was compelling. But yeah, when I say compelling, not that what that was compelling and met with compelling evidence, I should say. But yeah, I'm also just heavily incentivized in many ways to not want that to be the case. Like, I would really much prefer that, as much of the internet seems to think that me being at that debate and event was like an integral part of what got this guy killed, and I'd really like that to not be the case. I'd much rather it be a transgender activist or something like that, for my own reasons, and because it's just a terrifying thing if it's something else. But that's, you know, look, man, if there's just balls and strikes, if a bunch of people have been saying, I think there's a conspiracy and this needs to be investigated, and then you get the director of counterterrorism to come out and say, yep, I completely agree, and also my investigation was shut down, that's 1 point for them. 1 point in their category. All right. I guess we can wrap up there, Rob. We got a whole bunch more to keep talking about.
And check out Run Your Mouth, everybody. I'm cooking on episodes, usually Sundays and Wednesdays, the days I'm not here. So go check it out.
Check out Run Your Mouth. And of course, come see us in Boston next week. ComicDaveSmith.com for ticket links to that. Boston. And then we got Chicago coming up after that. So two of my favorite cities in this country and three of my favorite clubs that we'll be working at. So really excited for all these shows. See you guys soon. Peace.